I'm going to call a meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Wednesday, February 12th, 2014. Thank you all for joining us here today at your Capitol. So I'm going to go through what the plan is for this bill for this afternoon. First, we're going to hear from the sponsors of House Bill 4100. Then, if there are other legislators, we will hear from them. Second, we'll hear from the governor's office, Richard Whitman. He's on the phone. Third, we'll hear from four panels, two proponent and two opponents, starting with the proponents. Each invited panel of experts will have 15 minutes, so 5 minutes each. After that, and given the number of people here, we will invite public testimony, and with a two-minute limit. What I would ask you is that if you have written testimony, submit that. We will read it. Don't read your written testimony. Let us know what you're thinking. But please keep comments germane to this bill. What we're talking about today is a bill on labeling. It is important to speak to the bill as opposed to larger issues, because that's what we're discussing today in this committee hearing. And with that, I would like to hear from, I'd like to call up Representative Holvey, Representative Boone, and if Representative Buckley comes, we will call him up as well. So, open a public hearing on House Bill 4100. Erin, can you please review the measure?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4100 makes legislative findings and declarations regarding genetically engineered food, requires labeling of genetically engineered raw agricultural commodities and packages of genetically engineered processed food offered or expected to be offered for retail sale within the state, declares commodity or food misbranded if not labeled as required, allows person adversely affected or aggrieved by violation of labeling requirement after at least 60 days notice to the Attorney General to seek injunction against continued misbranding, applies to raw agricultural commodities held on or after January 1, 2016, refers to people for their approval or rejection at November 2014 general election. Members, you did have two amendments for your consideration. -1, it expands legislative findings regarding fully informing Oregon consumers. -2, expands legislative findings regarding fully informing Oregon consumers and changes the operative date to January 1, 2017.
And who would like to start? Age before beauty, Representative Holvey.
So nice. Thank you, Chair Hoyle, committee members. For the record, I'm Paul Holvey, State Representative, District 8, which is South Eugene and South Central Lane County. Thank you for providing an opportunity for a public hearing on House Bill 4100. I think Representative Boone and I have been talking about this issue and have introduced legislation for three or four sessions and have been looking forward to having a good public hearing on this topic. And that has largely been at the request of many constituents who have contacted me or my office and really wanted to have Oregon start labeling the foods that contain genetically engineered materials in them. And so I think that listening to the public, this bill proposes Oregon require labeling of genetically engineered foods and that the legislature refers that question to the voters of Oregon in the November 2014 election. And as one of the sponsors of this bill, I believe that Oregon consumers have a right to know whether the food they purchase and eat contain genetically engineered materials, and that this labeling proposal will provide those consumers the relevant information they need to make the decisions and avoid confusion in their decision-making process. I don't want to make any assertions that genetically engineered foods are bad or good. I think that there's a lot of science out there that would, because I've looked at it, and it's actually kind of confusing because there's some that say it's perfectly safe and it's good, and there's some that say it's bad. But what I do know is that there's been no long-term studies to really make this conclusion. And so the, in my mind, the jury's out on whether or not genetically engineered foods are healthy or not. But besides that, I think people, you know, have some other interest in making sure their foods are labeled. And first and foremost is that people want to avoid the confusion. Right now, I go to the grocery store and I can buy something that's all natural that it says on the label, and later on I find out that sure enough it has genetically engineered materials, and I wouldn't consider that as all natural, but that's what the label says. And so to me that's very confusing. And the other, you know, there's some points I'd like to make, you know, because I have heard that, well, we, you know, people can voluntarily label their foods as GMO-free. And, you know, that's currently allowed, and some foods manufacturers do that. But the fact of the matter is that not all manufacturers are able to do that or go to the expense to certify that their food is GMO-free. And so you end up with only foods that people voluntarily put out there are labeled GMO-free. And there's probably a lot of other foods that are, but so it still doesn't really tell you for certain which ones are and which ones aren't as far as containing genetically engineered materials. So I really think that labeling and this labeling proposal is really the practical way to make sure that consumers have the information they need when they make their choices. There's also, I think, been some confusion about preemptions, and I'm going to leave some other constitutional discussions out to others. I'm sure we'll bring those things up. I did run by legislative counsel this question last session, and got a response back that it appeared that it didn't violate the Commerce Clause if implemented correctly, and didn't have any problems with the Constitution as such if it was done properly. And so we've tried to fashion this bill so that it does that. And I think most of you probably know that there are a lot of advocates out there on this topic, and they are also bringing an initiative forward through the signature gathering process, and expect to have that on the ballot. I think it's incumbent upon the legislature to take a look at this issue and really consider this proposal to see if we want to refer something to the voters along the same lines. But I know there are some differences between the two proposals. One of the issues that I brought up in the past that I was concerned about actually had to do with the fishing industry and salmon. And with the advent of Aqua Bounty moving forward with getting the FDA to recognize a genetically engineered salmon, I thought it was pretty important that the state of Oregon get involved in this discussion, because we have a fishing industry that is based on wild-caught salmon. And I know that Oregon does not allow pin farming at this point. It's not in statute, but in rule in our oceans to raise salmon like that. But Washington does, and so does British Columbia. And so and there have been some environmental impacts because of that, allowed activity in British Columbia and what the state of Washington. There's been problems with disease in fish. And now we have to consider, and there's escapement problems, and now we have to consider that, you know, we potentially have genetically engineered fish coming into the market. And one of the best ways to, to help protect Oregon's interest in their fishing industry and in our protection of the environment is to let consumers know for certain whether or not they're eating something that's been genetically engineered or not. I know if I went to the grocery store, I'd want a wild-caught salmon and not one that was farmed and may be genetically engineered. But without labeling, I may never know. And so that's a very important piece, I think. And I know we all kind of followed the story of the genetically engineered wheat that appeared, and you know the impact that had to our markets, because our trading partners are now confused about whether Oregon is raising genetically engineered and selling them genetically engineered wheat. And there's something like 46 countries that around the probably more than that at this point. That's old data, hold me to that number. But there's a lot of countries, including the European Union, that require genetically engineered foods to be labeled. And so I think the interest of consumers is being expressed. They want to know. I think you can look at some of our manufacturers, our stores that are starting to go, we're not going to sell products that have genetically engineered materials in them. I think, and Cheerios, is now, coming out and verifying that their original brand of Cheerios does not have genetically engineered materials. So they're responding to the consumers wanting to know this information. And without labeling, I think consumers don't really have an opportunity to know for sure. And so they're pretty confused, not only just about all the different information they hear about health impacts, but if they wanted to support their local industry, their local farmers, and they want to have a diet of organic and foods that are genetically are not genetically engineered, it's very difficult for them to make that choice because they're confused about which products actually have genetically engineered materials and which ones don't. So I think that that sort of shows a little bit about I think the consumers have a lot of different interests involved in this, a lot of different reasons. Each one may be different. It's people want to steer their diet away from genetically engineered materials, or they don't believe that only God should create these our foods and they shouldn't be manipulated. They have so there's a lot of different aspects and a lot of different interests, whether it's the environment or whether it's the economy or whether it's potential health impacts or whether it's just their beliefs. I think they need to know. And I know that there's another point I'd like to make is that I understand I haven't actually seen it, but the Wine Institute from California was opposing this bill because we didn't expressly preempt, provide them a preemption. And I just did a quick little research on that because we had discussed this previously. This bill doesn't impact alcoholic beverages. It can't. We're preempted by the federal government from addressing alcoholic beverages in this manner. And so this bill doesn't apply to them. And so there's no reason to start listing who this bill doesn't apply to because, what if we left somebody off? It would create confusion in and of itself. So, I just wanted to point that out as well. The other pieces of this bill, I know that there's a -1 amendment and a -2 amendment. I think the committee administrator had explained the differences, and I would propose that the committee adopt one of those amendments. I think they're pretty important amendments in the bill itself. Then the part of the bill, and as I say, it does define genetically engineered materials. It kind of lays out two labeling processes. One is the labeling of processed and packaged foods, and one is the labeling of raw agricultural foods. So there's two different standards there. So and I think that how those things are labeled are spelled out in the bill, and I think it's very workable. There is some other pieces of this bill that I think are worth noting, that there is a de minimis amount, that's 0.9% in the bill, before it would meet a threshold to be considered genetically engineered. which doesn't seem like a lot, but it does address some minute issues. And this also, I think, one of the differences in this proposal is definitely about the liability issues. Under this proposal, a violation of this just goes into our Department of Agricultural statutes, and it's declared misbranded. And it also has the product liability aspect of it that I think the committee administrator addressed about notifying the Attorney General and, you know, and so on. And I won't speak to the initiative that's being brought forward by advocates, but it is a little bit different than that one. So one of the other important things I think that really needs to be stressed in this is, you know, we're asking the legislature to put this out to the voters and let them vote, let them make this decision. I think for us to say, no, we're not going to allow this to come out and we're not going to allow the voters to make this decision is not really the right path. They're taking their initiative already, and I recognize that, and I support their initiative and their right to bring something forward. But I think the legislature also has a place in referring what an option, you know, something that we consider, that we vet with our attorneys, that we vet in this body, and refer it to the voters, and give them a chance to vote on this, and let's, you know, see how that goes. I think that is very doable. I don't think it causes any, you know, undue, problems for industry. You know, they may have a different opinion. Some do, some don't, perhaps. But certainly around the world, we have food manufacturers that are already complying to these markets around the world that already require labeling. And there's a few other states that have passed labeling laws, and there are a few other states that are also moving forward just as we are at this point. So I will turn it over to Representative Boone at this point, and hopefully Representative Buckley shows up at some point to give his testimony. I know he's looking forward to it.
Great. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Identify yourself for the record.
I was just about to do that.
Okay.
I'm Deborah Boone. I represent the upper left coast of our beautiful state, House District 32. And I'm here today and again sitting beside Paul. This isn't the case. But we have been through this before a couple of times, and this is a little bit different in that it is a referral and it's just labeling. So I've heard from a lot of my constituents on this and a lot of people who are not my constituents, and that's basically what they're asking for, is the right to know what's in their food and what it's made of. So that's why I'm here. That's why I agreed to sign on with my friend here, the technician and the pro in all this. He does a lot of research, and I bet you any question you ask, if I can't answer it, he can. So thank you for considering this bill today, 4100, and I hope you consider it in the positive. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Anyone on the committee have questions? Yes.
Thank you.
Representative Berger.
This went out to the voters not too long ago. What do you think has substantially changed or is different about your bill than the one that was voted, I think, 2002 or somewhere, and was defeated? What's changed or what's different about your bill? Do you have thoughts on that? I don't mean to put you on the spot, but
yeah. Well, I will confess that I'm not all that familiar with the 2002 piece. I didn't do a lot of research on that. I tend to look forward, although I should learn a lot from history, but I think one thing that's changed for certain is that consumers have become much more diligent and much more concerned about their diets. I think that's something that's becoming more and more prevalent in consumers interest, and they're very concerned about their diets and much more concerned about their health as we've learned more and more about illness, disease, and, you know, just the impacts of being healthy. And, you know, I think everybody's got, you know, their own points of view about that, but certainly people should be able to make their own choices. I think that, that this piece also is designed to fit into our current statutory framework. So I'm not creating whole new sections of law with all sorts of different liabilities. You know, this one fits into our existing statutory framework. And whether it's the Department of Agriculture or whether it's the, you know, products liability issues, that's different in this proposal as well.
One more thing, because that you or someone else may be able to answer. The standard 0.9 is I noticed in the bill given to Department of Agriculture, can the Department of Agriculture even do that for all the products that are on the shelf, and how much would that be directing that agency? And that's really not a question for you, mm-hmm. but it's to me a pretty fine standard, and how's the Department of Agriculture, our Department of Agriculture, which is not the biggest agency by any means, going to test all the products that come in the borders of Oregon is a question that I have. And I'm not necessarily asking you to give an exhaustive answer, but it is a real concern, because our Department of Agriculture, this is sort of not within what has been core mission for them.
So I will defer that to some others, but just a quick little snippet about it and let others expand upon that. I don't believe the Department of Agriculture is required to make that determination. I think it can be made by third parties, and they just need to be recognized, I believe. So, and the 0.9% is something that's actually established in many of the international markets. That's their standard, and we're trying to keep the standard similar to other places that do have that same piece. So
anyone else? Yes,
and hopefully somebody can follow up with your representative, Madam Chair, on that piece.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Part of this issue there was a significant emergence of this issue in the last special session. The governor back in September, October, the end. The governor sent a letter out on October 1st, 2013, saying that he was going to convene a task force on this greater topic, actually a little further than yours, ask us all to stand down, and that he would be preparing recommendations for legislation in 2015. Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering about your choice to
I can appreciate the governor's position, but it was very unclear to me, and I still haven't seen a task force be named or set up. And it was my understanding the governor's task force was aimed at the Senate Bill 633 issues and not labeling. So if that's changed, they haven't talked to me about it.
And I guess we'll have a chance to discuss that soon with the governor's office, because I would think if they're going to make recommendations about this complex issue that deserves careful consideration, I would think they would also have some recommendations regarding labeling and some of these other issues.
That very well could be. I can't speak for the governor's office. I have no indication that they are considering labeling. I thought their discussions were all about the crops and being able to restrict certain areas from having genetically engineered crops in them together, sort of the whole right to farm issue. So, you know, if the governor's want to do a task force on this, I'm very supportive of him doing a task force, but I don't know that takes away any legislator's particular right to bring an issue forward, or the people to bring an initiative forward. And, you know, I will admit that one of the You know, we've brought this issue before, as Representative Boone has mentioned, several sessions, and have gotten, you know, no traction from the governor's office on this issue before. And in fact, the voters and advocates are bringing this forward in an initiative in November 2014, which, you know, is another compelling reason for my consideration to actually have the legislature consider a referral as well, to give a different perspective to the voters from the legislature. And I think that's important to do. I think the legislature has some tools and resources to craft something a little that fits into Oregon statutes. And so I think it's pretty imperative that we move forward with that. And unfortunately, the governor's task force isn't going to be able to put together that kind of a proposal in its framework to address labeling. And again, I have no indication from the governor's office. They have not contacted me about this or ever mentioned that their task force was going to consider labeling that I'm aware of.
Can I just add to
that
then? I just wanted to say that we're doing just what the chair asked too, is this bill just addresses labeling. And it's my understanding that the task force has to do with the 2013 version of 633.
Representative Buckley, thank you for joining us. Please identify yourself and give your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County and the legislature. Thank you for your time and consideration. My apologies for not being able to be here right at 3 o'clock. And I know how dangerous this is to say, but I support everything that Representatives Holvey and Boone have said.
That's kind of hard on your credibility.
I want you next to me next.
Madam Chair, members,
this is an issue that so many Oregonians have contacted us about, following the discussions during the 2013 session and special session concerning the GMOs and the bill that eventually did pass during the special session. Our office received, I lost count after 500 emails concerning GMOs in Oregon. The issue has been resolved in terms of the bill that passed. But the issue of labeling came up consistently during the communications I received from people who are concerned about this area. And there seemed to be very strong common ground on the issue of labeling. Even people that were supportive of GMO crops felt that it's fair, at least ones who communicated with me, that it's fair to let people know what is in the products that they are purchasing and providing for their families. Given that, and given the very realistic probability that there will be a labeling bill on the ballot in November, Representative Holvey and I did reach out to the advocates who are putting together that proposal. We did ask to do some research over what the election in Washington came down to in regard to how voters saw the proposal in Washington and the strengths and weaknesses of that proposal. And we've done our best to take the proposal that was on the ballot in Washington and change it to make it fit for Oregon and make it to be as common sense, straightforward as we possibly can. So in a sense, we're asking you and our colleagues in the legislature to consider allowing the people of the state of Oregon to have this vote and make their decision based on what we believe is a very straightforward, common sense approach to labeling. Let people have the knowledge of what's in the products that they buy. I think you'll find it's a very, very popular idea with your constituents, and I appreciate your time and consideration. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any Representative Harker, you had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. My thoughts on this matter of GMOs in general fall into three large categories: democracy, science, and economics. And I think that in terms of democracy, I appreciate what we're trying to do here and put this out in the hands of the general public and let them decide if we're going to have labeling of foods as described here. On the scientific side, I'm not an expert on this, but I do put a lot of stock in what comes out of hard research. And the things that I have looked at are admittedly a couple of years old, but I want to come back to discussion about long-term studies. the articles that I've seen review long-term studies in animal models of up to 2 years of feeding and multi-generational studies, and they conclude in well-published journals that there's not a lot of difference. There's no negative impact of these feeds. That being said, we've got economic issues that I think you, Holvey, outlined really well. I remember the furor that you talked about when those wheat plants were located, and that's a very, very real impact to this state and the country and the world. So I have to temper everything that science tells me a little bit in this building here. But if you could just help me a little bit when you're saying, I'd like to hear a little now and maybe more offline if that's more appropriate about the lack of long-term studies. And I don't know if you're thinking just about human studies or what. So help me out if you would, okay?
Well, I think there's probably others that come up and speak more specifically about some of those studies, but certainly there hasn't been a long-term human studies on the impacts. And, you know, I've looked at studies too, and, most of the studies that have been brought forward have been brought forward to the FDA, you know, through the industry, because that's their process, and they really don't determine whether it's safe or not. They just determine that it's a food. And, there's so many studies. I don't think this bill really is about whether genetically engineered materials, whether we know for certain whether they're safe or healthy or there's risk to them. I think there's information that would lead you to believe either of those scenarios. But what I do believe is there's a lot of information out there, and it's quite frankly confusing. That's why we all come out with different opinions after reading some of this stuff. And I think consumers have the right to know so they can make their own decisions. I don't want to predetermine your science is screwy, and I'm not going to say it is or isn't, or your science is slanted one way or the other, because I can produce science that says just the opposite. So it's not about that for me. It's not about whether the science is one way or the other, or what's it tell us. I don't think there have been any studies that are over 10 years old, 10 years of human consumption of genetically engineered materials, long-term studies. And so, you know, I think people have a right to know and a right to make their own decision when it comes to the health. But, you know, there's a lot of concerns about how genetically engineered crops impact our environment, impact other farms, impact our economy, one way or the other. You know, there's a lot of economic concerns. Mm-hmm. And, I think labeling is a piece of addressing those concerns and letting people be able to make their own decisions and letting people be able to support their local economy that they want to support. If I want to, if I really love the taste of organic foods and I want to make sure that they don't have any genetically engineered materials in them, and I want to be able to support that local economy. And right now I go to the store, I don't know for certain whether I'm supporting a food manufacturer that is using genetically engineered materials or not.
Follow up, and then we really need to move on because we have a lot of people in the room that would like to testify.
Very briefly, thank you.
Yep.
Just to say that I agree with very much of what you've said, and I am not at all interested in preventing the people from making this decision, and that's what this bill is about. It's about letting them decide. I hope that we as a community are able to have a fairly high-level discussion about it, or a well-informed discussion about it as we go forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much for joining us. Okay, second, Richard Whitman from the Governor's Office. I want to thank you for being patient and waiting, and we are hearing about House Bill 4100. I think we wanted to know briefly what there was a work group created to deal with GMO issues after Senate Bill 633, forget the name of the bill, But we'd like to know what the status of that work group is, but specifically whether or not that work group will address labeling, who's been put on that, and where you are in the process.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resources Advisor. My apologies for not being able to be there in person today. I know this is a piece of legislation of great importance to both many members and many folks in the public as well. So I am going to try to be brief here because I know you've got a lot of people in the room. Just give you a quick update on where things are on the task force on genetically engineered agricultural products. At the time of the special session back in late September, early October, the governor sent a letter to leadership supporting the creation of a task force to examine a number of issues related to genetically engineered agricultural products. His letter speaks for itself and specifically says that the task force will examine both issues regarding conflicts between genetically engineered and non-genetically engineered crops, as well as issues concerning consumer choice and labeling. And that is still the plan that the task force, the scope of the issues task force will be looking at will include both conflict issues in terms of growers as well as consumer choice and labeling issues.
So what's the... go ahead.
Where we're at in terms of the process of starting the task force is we have a request pending with the legislature that will be heard tomorrow in Ways and Means Subcommittee for funding to operate the task force. We have reached an agreement with Oregon Consensus to staff the task force and provide the support for the task force that I think will be needed to do a quality job. And we have identified the basic makeup of the task force, although we have not finalized the list of task force members. So I can tell you today who the governor has identified as co-conveners for the task force, and I can describe generally the makeup of the task force, but I can't give you individual names of task force members, in part because we're still in discussion with those individuals, and in part because we are still receiving input, frankly, from members of the legislature with thoughts about this issue that we are wanting to make sure that we take into consideration as well. So, co-conveners. The co-conveners for the task force are Dan Harp, who is the Dean of the School of Agriculture at Oregon State University, and Jennifer Allen, who is the Director of the Institute for Sustainability at Portland State University. Beyond that, the makeup of the task force is approximately 14 people with a mix of representatives of, if you will, conventional agriculture, and then representatives of agriculture who are familiar with the non-GE agricultural products, including organic growers, as well as folks involved in purchasing of agricultural products. We also are intending to put two more technical groups of people on the task force. One, folks who have technical expertise in the conflict issues that I mentioned briefly, and secondly, some folks who have some expertise in the technical aspects of consumer choice and labeling. And our design will have individuals, again, who are representative, if you will, of both the conventional and non-GE perspectives. We we are meeting with the co-conveners next week to work out final details of this. We expect to announce membership of the task force probably also the end of next week, and the basic schedule of the task force will be meeting every 3 weeks to get going, and then every month leading to delivery of a report and recommendations to the governor this fall. So that's just a very quick summary of where we're at on the task force, and I'd be very happy to answer any questions.
Any questions or comments? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. This is probably more of a comment than a question. I'm certainly hoping that the task force will be widely representative and include people from the organic food growing community, people with expertise in that area, as well as people from other aspects of agriculture. I think it's important, if it's possible, for us to have a clearly representative task force that is able to represent the technical knowledge of all of the fields that are involved here, and that whatever reports they come up with can be broadly trusted because they have been vetted by people with those diverse backgrounds.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle and Representative Barnhart. That is very much the design that we have of the task force. We've been working hard with the many interests involved in these issues, as well as legislators, to try to make sure that we have a very fairly balanced task force that represents both technical expertise and viewpoints on these issues.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Whitman, I appreciate the comments that you've made. I'm kind of curious, though, as the governor is and you're off and yourself are watching the potential initiative coming forward, do you think that preempts your task force from coming back with another recommendation to the legislature? Because certainly the task force was announced in October. This is February. It still hasn't got started, and I would guess that something will be before the voters in November, and I don't know that your task force will have recommendations by that time frame. But certainly if it did, if an initiative were or a referral were to pass, I believe the recommendations of that task force could be debated in the legislature, and potentially action could be taken. So it wouldn't really, it doesn't appear to me that the initiative or referral would in any way interrupt or interfere with that process. But I'm curious whether you hold that opinion.
Chair Hoyle and Representative Holby, we are obviously aware of the ballot measure and obviously this legislation that's before the committee today. I think, as you're aware, there are limitations on what the state can do in terms of participating in, certainly in the ballot measure, and as well as the potential referendum. So I think we would view these as separate things, if you will, and that the ballot measure will go forward, and if this bill passes, the referendum would go forward, and that the work of the task force really will be isolated from those efforts and really directed at the 2015 legislative assembly, and certainly not at anything that might be before the voters in the fall.
Thank you.
All right, anyone else? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Whitman, and with that, you're free to go about and do good work and other things. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn. Bye.
All right. So, again, what we'll have now is invited testimony from panels of experts on both sides. Each panel gets 5 minutes per person on the panel, so a panel of three would get 15 minutes. The first panel will be Joe Rogoff on the phone, and forgive me if I butcher your name, just correct me. I apologize in advance. Dr. Ray Seidler and Ivan Molesky. So, Mr. Rogoff, are you on the phone?
I am on the phone.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And
thanks very much, and you pronounced my name perfectly.
Excellent.
Chair Hoyle, Rules Committee members, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you today.
My name is Joe Rogoff.
I am the president of Whole Foods Market Pacific Northwest. We have seven stores in the state of Oregon. I'm really pleased to be here today in support of HB 4100, removing customer confusion by requiring that products containing GMOs are properly labeled. I am really sorry I can't be there in person, but I feel this issue is of so much importance to me personally and to Whole Foods Market that I wanted to offer my testimony, and I thank you for being able to do it by phone. We believe our customers have a right to know what they're buying. Simply stated, labeling creates this clarity and avoids customer confusion. We label for so many attributes right now, from ingredients and allergens to nutrition, country of origin. And as it stands, the most common question we get in our stores today is whether products contain genetically modified ingredients. So because of this tide, because we've always believed in transparency, Whole Foods Market has committed to labeling of all products containing GMOs by 2018. We're serious about our customers having the information they need to make choices about what they're buying without confusion. I wanted to give you a little bit of information about our internal initiative that might help answer some questions about whether this is practical. Many of these statistics are very current. Some of them are a little bit older. But non-GMO sales of our products that are non-GMO, verified, organic, are now over $1 billion annually in our company, with 23% sales growth, far exceeding sales growth in other categories. We have over 6,000 items that are non-GMO verified. We have 500 brands participating in non-GMO verification projects. We sold over 200 million units of non-GMO items last year. Grocery right now is over 52% transparent in sales dollars regarding GMOs. That means 52% of the sales dollars that we have are products that are labeled as non-GMO products. Over a dozen categories are now 80% or more transparent. 40 product categories are more than 50% organic or non-GMO. There are many more stats I could provide across a broad range of products, but these statistics reflect a movement toward non-GMO production. But our initiative only states we'll label. This movement and these efforts by our producer partners are in response not only to our initiative, but more to the preferences expressed by our shoppers that are exhibited by how they're buying. We're not going to discontinue products labeled as containing GMOs. We only want to clarify for shoppers that these products contain them so they can make informed choices. Labeling is absolutely doable for retailers, and our producers can do it too, as they've exhibited by marketing their products overseas where labeling laws exist now. And in summary, our customers tell us they want to know if the products on our shelves contain GMOs, and we at Whole Foods Market intend to tell them. We believe it should be true for every store in the state of Oregon and every store in the United States. I fully support HB 4100, and I think it's appropriate this is a legislative effort, because as written, I find it provides a clarity that the previous state initiatives, including the one in Washington, have not. I believe its enactment will remove confusion about the presence of genetically modified organisms. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Rogoff. And if you wouldn't mind hanging on the phone, we're going to listen to the other two people on the panel and then open it up for questions. Is that all right?
I'll stay on.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Molesky, identify yourself. And
all right. Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, for the record, Ivan Molesky. I'm the director of Friends of Family Farmers. We are a nonprofit organization based in Molalla, Oregon, that works to promote and protect socially responsible family-scale agriculture in Oregon. We've got about 3,500 members and supporters across the state. This membership includes many conventional and organic farmers. We also operate Oregon's only land link service, which connects beginning farmers to established operations for training, leasing, and farm ownership opportunities. On a personal note, I also raise pastured pork and seasonally turkeys and chicken, as well as occasionally some fresh market vegetables and hay on property in Linn County, so I'm a farmer as well. I did want to call your attention briefly before I jump into my testimony to some of the submitted testimony that's on OLIS from some, I think, important folks that shows, I think, the diversity of perspectives across both rural and urban Oregon around this this issue. Oregon Rural Action is based out of LeGrand. They support labeling. Rogue Farm Corps, a farm trading operation that's based in the southern Rogue Valley and southern Willamette Valley as well, supporting the this bill. Organically Grown Company, which is the state's largest distributor of organic produce, been around for many years and based in Eugene. And Oregon Tilth, which is another organization that works with farmers all across the state and dealing with all aspects of the supply chain, all in support of this legislation. So as an organization that works with and represents family farmers across Oregon, we favor transparency in our food system. And as such, believe consumers do have the right to know how their food is produced, including whether it contains genetically engineered material. We found that this concern over how widespread genetically engineered material is, despite the lack of food labeling, is something that crosses party lines. It's not a Republican issue or Democrat issue, and it crosses rural and urban boundaries. We hear this from a lot of folks from a lot of different perspectives, that they're very concerned about how we've gotten this far down the road in terms of genetic engineering in our processed foods in particular, without any sort of labeling required. A consistent theme we hear among many farmers is that the current federal system around regulation of genetically engineered crops and foods lacks transparency and oversight. This causes uncertainty for farmers, and it breeds mistrust in the marketplace among consumers. Now, genetically engineered crops are controversial among farmers for a variety of reasons. There are issues around herbicide resistance. There are issues around pesticide drift and genetic drift. There's concerns about liability if you should get sued by a patent holder. But in large part, whether you're conventional or organic, whether even if you're a GMO grower, there's growing concerns that they're hearing from customers. So we would argue that in Oregon, the vast majority of farmers really have nothing to hide. They're happy to talk about their practices, whatever they may be. And we would suggest that, in fact, many have much to gain from this sort of a labeling effort. And many sectors of agriculture really have nothing to lose by moving forward with labeling. So I guess it's important to note that the HB 4100, or the measure that it would create and send to the ballot, does not tell farmers what they can and can't grow. It's not a crop management piece of legislation. It only applies to processed foods and raw agricultural commodities intended for human consumption in Oregon. So if you look at the list of Oregon's biggest cash crops, the top money producers like greenhouse and nursery stock, cattle and calves, hay, dairy, wheat, Christmas trees, would not be impacted by this bill because either they're not being genetically engineered or they're not intended for human consumption. Many other big Oregon crops like hazelnuts, berries, fruits, and most vegetables are also not produced with genetic engineering. Even prominent food processing companies like NORPAC and Truitt Brothers have made commitments to not grow crops that are genetically engineered in their sustainability materials. So as new GE crops are proposed, many of them are raising concerns among family farmers. Genetically engineered wheat has gotten a lot of attention, obviously, for its impact, potential impact on export markets. But more recently, the USDA's likely approval of a Canadian company's proposal for non-browning genetically engineered apple has been highly controversial amongst Northwest apple producers out of fears that apple sales will decline and the financial risks associated with that. So we believe that, again, the measure that this bill would create provides an important tool to increase transparency in the marketplace. It allows Oregon consumers to make informed choices, and it provides just another way for Oregon to distinguish itself for growing and producing high-quality food that Oregonians and people across the nation and world can trust. So we respectfully urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a reminder, when coming up, if you could hit the high points of your testimony. We have the written testimony available to us, so just to make sure we can get through. And Dr. Seidler.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm a retired scientist from the United States Environmental Protection Agency down in Corvallis, where when I worked.
I just need you to identify yourself for the record.
Ray Seidler, Ashland.
Perfect, thank you.
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay. I'm just trying to give you a little background.
Okay, great. Go right ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Okay, no problem. And my job, my responsibility was to develop safety tests for genetically engineered organisms, and I pursued that part of my career for about 16 or 17 years. I'm now a public speaker and have talked in the last 6 months to audiences from Central America to Josephine County, speaking about educational needs on the technology. Every single one of those talks, the room is full. Whether it's 50 seats, there's standing room only. There's a lot of interest among the consumers and among your constituents on this topic. Okay, so here we go. Are you aware that we have 64 countries in part or in whole or states or counties within those countries that require labeling of genetically engineered foods? And guess what? The United States exports a lot of genetically engineered crops to those very countries from farms in the Midwest, corn, soybean, etc. And when those crops go to those countries, those consumers know that what they are. They're genetically engineered and those materials are labeled for them. We as Americans and consumers can receive the same food from the same batch of farms and not know what it is. It's not labeled. Do you think that's confusing to the consumers? Mm-hmm. Also, please know that harvested genetically engineered crops are biochemically, molecularly, and certainly functionally very different from their non-genetically engineered components. Also, remember that all of these items are novel, unique, one-of-a-kind, first guy on the block, and they're patented by the U.S. Patent Office. So the consumers asked me after my talks, if they're unique and patented, how can they be the same as the non-genetically engineered foods that we eat? I'm confused, the public tells me. Okay, so allow me to give you by two examples some further situations that confuse our consumers about labeling and the need for labeling. As you may be aware, in 1992, the U.S. Congress requested of the Food and Drug Administration to develop some rules about labeling of our foods. And it out came the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act from the U.S. Congress, and the FDA said, okay, here are the rules. One, does that label omit something and mislead our consumer? Does it omit significant material information? What means material? Okay, and the answer is what means material is something that we can perceive, sense as being different. It looks different, it tastes different, smells different, has a different texture, or any combination of those things. Let me give you an example in our everyday lives that you know. Representative Holdley talked earlier about salmon. We probably all purchased the farmed Atlantic salmon. Beautiful orange-colored flesh. That's artificial color that is added in the feed for those animals. That particular item in the box store, when you go to buy it, if you look next to the price, it tells you this product contains an artificial color. Why is it labeled like that? Because you can see, perceive the difference. On the other hand, we now are going to receive, perhaps, soon a genetically engineered product called Arctic Apple. By the way, that salmon is not genetically engineered. This apple is all about doing away with the natural enzymatic activity, the Browning reaction. So when you go to a store and they have a promotion, you'll see some beautiful sliced white apples. Wow, you're going to love those. And they may have a Fuji or a Granny Smith or a Red Delicious next to it that looks ugly and brown. White versus brown, you can perceive the difference. Why aren't the Arctic apples then labeled analogous to the fish? Okay, I see my time
is up. Yes, thank you very much, and I'm sorry that we have to limit testimony, but we have a lot of people here, and we want to make sure everyone gets heard. So are there questions from the committee? Representative Hicks.
Hello, Dr. Seiler. Good to see you again.
We've met.
So you'll know where to find me on Saturday if you want to continue this discussion.
Thank you.
Anyway, yeah, for any member of our panel, though, Dr. Robot Goff included. Okay, so Section 4 of the bill, lines 11, 12, 13, a genetically engineered raw agricultural commodity in package form must be labeled on the front or back of the package in a clear and conspicuous manner with the words genetically engineered. So it sounds like that's a departure from traditional labeling requirements or protocol for the FDA. I'm thinking about your testimony, particularly Dr. Seiler, and Dr. Rudolph could certainly add to this, as in this would be a more prominent part of the label than other information that's contained on their saturated fat content, whatever, salt, sodium, things that science has concluded one way or the other. People need, or probably bad for you or in excess or bad for you, and people need to know that information. So this is going to, from our reading of the bill, exceed the traditional labeling protocol. As in, and so there's kind of an implication that this is the most important piece of information on the label if this bill and this underlying form were to pass. Mm-hmm. So could I hear reactions about that?
Chair Hoyle, Representative Hicks, the bill is fairly, you know, as you noticed, it's a fairly short bill. It doesn't specify the size of the text, just says clear and conspicuous. I would say it wouldn't be in the ingredients list at that size, but it would be more likely to be along the lines of this item contains peanuts or may contain nut fragments, like some of those types of labels that you see, or what you see on juice where it says this may contain juice from concentrate. So it's a little bit larger, but it's not necessarily larger than those types of things. The bill doesn't specify just the exact size of text and those types of things.
All right. Mr. Rogoff, did you have any comment to that?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay. Anyone, Representative Holden?
Thank you. Dr. Seiler, I do have a keen interest in salmon, and I was curious on your perception of how the potential for salmon being genetically engineered and the impacts that you view that having.
There is actually some hardcore science believable information on that very topic, actually published by Canadian scientists, and I mention it that way because that's where some of the work has been done out of Canada on the genetically engineering the hormone hyped up oversized salmon. And the bottom line results are that even the proposed manufacturer, the owner of the genetically engineered concept, the fish, have admitted there will be some very low-level genetic leakage. These are not 100.000 sterile fish. Okay, if any of you have ever been to one of Oregon's salmon fish hatcheries, you see those fish jump like crazy. And when they're fed, have you ever seen any of them jump out of the tubs, out of the weirs that they're withheld in? For sure, these fish are not going to be 100% contained. This is manifested in the company's desire at one time to use only landlocked facilities to raise these organisms. And I don't see any rules or regulations out there that would require that. And specifically, the Canadian scientists showed that in experimental river systems, the genetically engineered salmon can outcompete their non-genetically engineered counterparts and also consume another species that we make fish for, a brook trout. So there are these ecological flags. If they're not red, they're orange, that have been put up, and these are some of the kinds of concerns that we see.
Any other questions from the committee? All right. Thank you so much, and Mr. Rogoff, thank you so much for joining us. We do very much appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good. Turn him off. All right. Then, do you want to stay on the phone, or do you want to get off the phone?
I'm off.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you, Rick.
Can't believe he didn't want to stay on and listen to our hearing. next I'd like to call up James Curry, Kevin Richards, and Brenda Frickatish. Sorry. Okay. start, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is James Curry. I'm the Director of Government Affairs at the Northwest Food Processors Association here in opposition to House Bill 4100. Northwest Food Processors Association represents small, medium, and large food processing companies here in Oregon and the Pacific Northwest. We do have concerns about state-based labeling of genetically engineered foods, the sort of regulation you'd find in House Bill 4100. I've submitted written testimony that I won't read to you. I hope you could take a look at it, about a three-page letter. But I do want to point out a couple of things. Under FDA regulations, labels must be truthful, not misleading, and must be substantiated. Label statements that imply products with or without GE ingredients are somehow better or different than their traditional counterparts may be considered misleading under federal regulations. And that is because, according to the FDA, there is no substantial difference between crops grown with conventional or GE technology, so it is not considered material information relative to health and safety or nutritional value. I think that's a really important point to consider when we express our concerns about cost to the industry. The cost is not in printing or applying a label. It is in substantiation, verification, and testing, and really proving those label claims. I'd like to point you to page 2 of the letter. There's a laundry list of cost drivers that we see, about 10 bullet points there, that we believe would drive up the cost to the industry and therefore consumers. That has to do with, again, substantiating those label claims, testing each lot of food and product, a variety of ingredients from a variety of different sources for multiple products. The regulation and the complications extend far beyond Oregon's borders and across the supply chain.
Madam Chair,
yes.
Is his letter on all of us?
Yes.
It is.
Ah, got it. Thank you.
Yep. Sorry.
No problem.
What we do know about the science is what we know from the FDA, from the World Health Organization, from the National Academy of Sciences, from all the respected scientific and regulatory bodies that have said there is no compelling reason to label, no compelling reason with respect to health or safety. And we have to rely on those regulatory bodies, particularly at the federal level, for interstate commerce. We know that alternatives exist. USDA certified organic does provide an alternative for consumers who may have concerns. And so this is really about consumer choice rather than health and safety and nutrition. I'd like to point out Section 7 of the bill, what I would call regulation by litigation, allowing a new private cause of action. Private plaintiff attorneys and individuals can sue on behalf of the state. And our biggest concern with that is those small and medium-sized companies here in this region would face substantial cost to defend themselves in lawsuits or settle, even an inadvertent violation of the measure. Again, there is a federal deal here. There is a group working at the federal level, a coalition of food industry groups, looking to provide some clarity. We think that is the proper place to handle these sorts of labeling requirements. Doing it state by state does not work for those local companies, again, the small and medium-sized companies homegrown here in Oregon. And we would like to see the governor's task force move forward with a scientific approach and involvement from experts and interested parties. We think this is premature. And you did hear comments earlier about international markets and other countries that require it. Again, those are countries. Those are not individual states or provinces. And that's what you have to deal with here for the local companies and companies doing business in this part of the country. So with that, I'd conclude my comments and be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks. Just identify yourself for the record.
Okay, my name is Brenda Furkatich. You're very close. I'm from St. Paul, Oregon, and I farm 1,000 acres. We raise perennial ryegrass for seed, hazelnuts, peas, and wheat and clover. I would just like to talk to you a little bit about, as far as me being a young farmer, what kind of this bill looks like to me. I don't grow any GMO crops currently on our farm, but I can see the potential for this technology being useful for us in the future and letting us continue to be competitive on not just a national scale in the state of Oregon, but also on a worldwide scale. I think that using all these technologies is going to be really important. You can see in my written testimony, I kind of labeled out a few of those examples. One is actually the growing of hazelnuts. Many of you may notice as you're driving around the Willamette Valley, there's a lot of new orchards going in recently. There's been a gap for about 20 years because it took that long to try to figure out how to get blight-resistant trees. We did this the old-fashioned way, thanks to Oregon State University, but it's something that if we're able to use gene mapping tools and genetically modified tools, I think that this could have happened a lot quicker, and I think that we could have spent the last 2 decades working on the many myriad of other problems that we're having to try to reduce our input and impact on the environment. Just as an example, those trees that are not blight resistant, we have to spray up to 4 to 5 times a year, and we spend extremely large amounts of money just on pruning of those trees to try to keep a healthy tree, and we're still losing the battle. So I think that, you know, you may see that as, yes, you know, the old-fashioned way works, but I think that there's some real opportunity in the future to use genetically modified technology to try to get that gap smaller and be able to focus on a lot of other issues that we're having with our crops. I also think that this is creates a marketing disadvantage for a lot of farmers. And I'm not naive to the fact that there is a market for non-GMO products. I think that's pretty clear. I was at Bob's Red Mill just a few months ago with a group of young farmers, and they told us that they're going to roll out with a non-GMO labeled product line. And, you know, my question to him was, why are you doing that? Do you feel like there's a safety issue? And he said, no, it's just what our consumer, what we've heard from consumers that they want. But they're also continuing with a line that does not say this contains GMO. So they're doing both product lines because they see the value in both markets. So I think that really speaks to the fact that, you know, they're taking it upon themselves. They're taking that price burden of labeling, of researching that onto their line that they know is going to be a niche market that they're going to be able to sell their product for. And so I think that that's where the voluntary labeling becomes really important and might be a better option than mandatory labeling of GMO products. As a wife and a soon-to-be mom, as you might have seen when I walked up, I understand walking through the grocery store and seeing something that might make you scared to feed your kids and might make you take a step back and think about what you're going to put on their plate in the evening. But at the same time, I also see that there might be people out there that don't really realize what that label really truly means. And that's what is hard for me, is when the fear marketing overtakes what people can really see in the grocery store. And there's some issues like such as golden rice that actually adds vitamin A and becomes a healthier product for family members and is truly saving lives. And there's also oysters that, you know, we all enjoy during the summer, which we couldn't enjoy before because something as simple as a sex chromosome was removed. And it's not a big deal, but it's a huge industry for Oregon as well. Also, drought-tolerant crops, you know, allowing us to save on water, which, as you're going to see coming these summer months, you probably heard about our snowpack. It's terrible. And, you know, farmers in southern Oregon are really going to be struggling. So what if we could have had those crops that now they don't need, they just need a fraction of the water to be able to produce down there? I think that GMOs should be tested. I think they should be continually tested. And that this issue is probably, well, I know it's not going to go away anytime soon. But I think that the label is really just going to drive a wedge deeper between the people who are scared of what's in their food and the people who are trying to make rational decisions about their food based on science. So I have a few other examples in my letter, so I appreciate you reading that, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir, identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Kevin Richards from Jefferson County, Madras. Madam Chair, members, thanks for the opportunity to share my views with you today. I operate a family farm in the Central Oregon High Desert where we grow hybrid carrot seed, Kentucky bluegrass seed, peppermint oil, alfalfa, hay, and wheat on about 600 irrigated acres. And importantly, or notably, in 2006, we added herbicide-tolerant, genetically engineered alfalfa to our crop rotation. So my remarks here today are as a specialty farmer, as a commodity farmer, but also as a GE farmer, and I suppose also as an Oregon consumer. And I very eagerly admit that as a consumer, labeling of genetically engineered foods does on its surface sound appealing. But what I'd ask you to do is really consider some of the deeper unintended consequences that mandatory labeling might have. I've provided written testimony where I've expanded on these, but to highlight Unilaterally enacting and enforcing mandatory GE labeling in Oregon will increase costs and put Oregon agriculture at a disadvantage. Labeling is going to require identity preservation within crops, which there's no free lunch. That's not a cheap way to grow and market crops. We do it for our, some of our specialty seeds. It requires greater stewardship costs, greater management costs, segregation. And that segregation happens on the farm, but it also happens downstream, which requires more infrastructure, more intensive management than what currently our agriculture and food system has. So that's a very significant cost. That's the burden of that cost is put on farmers and those that we sell our products to. Also, a reduction in the availability, the choice that we have to the access that we have for the highest quality seeds that are compatible with the highest quality inputs. So I would expect that that would really, mandatory labeling would really change the composition of agriculture in Oregon in a way that would increase those costs. And then finally, as was mentioned previously, I think probably the largest and most unseen cost is that of testing, compliance, enforcement, and the risk of litigation, which many farmers don't have the resources and capacity to deal with. Certainly that burden would fall disproportionately on small and I think disadvantaged farmers, young family farmers such as myself who don't have the means to deal with some of that litigation and some of those enforcement costs and inspection and testing and so on. Also, I think mandatory GE labeling is really going to disadvantage and discourage research investment and innovation in agricultural products in Oregon. So that's going to have a direct impact on the economy just by the flow of research dollars and the associated high-value, high-skilled jobs that are associated with those research dollars. But I think the larger, long-term, significant economic impact is in the outcome of that research. So most GE crops today have agronomic benefits, meaning that it's easier for farmers to grow more efficiently, more productively, with fewer inputs and less of an impact on the environment. And that's a little bit hard for consumers to understand where they see that benefit. They might see it in price, but it's not always clear that or it's not clear at all that is reflected in price. But I think the future is very exciting, and I think that there's a lot of technology that, as was mentioned, golden rice, technology that does have consumer benefits, that has nutritional benefits for consumers, can reduce the food waste, which has significant environmental and consumer benefits, and can deal with some of the natural resource scarcity, water scarcity, environmental pressures that farmers are really struggling to deal with today. So I think it's the greater long-term cost is in reduction in that innovation and access to the new technology that's still in the pipeline and that farmers could really benefit as well as consumers in the environment. Finally, I think that it's a misconception that mandatory labeling will help small niche agriculture. There's a lot of very exciting voluntary labeling initiatives out there. There, of course, is a national organic standard, which allows for process-based certification of non-GE. There's the non-GE project. And I think that those are really exciting and have a lot of potential, and I would urge not to crowd out those innovative, creative, voluntary marketing initiatives.
Thank you for being here today. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Holby.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments and the discussion. But I wanted to clarify something, because as I read this bill, I guess I ask you as farmers, when you plant a crop or when you're growing your crops, you know ahead of time whether or not you're growing a genetically engineered crop or not, I would assume. So you know that ahead of time. And so I don't know that the bill requires you to go through a testing regime to verify that. If you know it, you would be able to go ahead and label it without, and not be subject to any kind of, added costs other than the actual label, I suppose. I don't think the bill, you know, says you have to test your crops. Even, you know, if you know they're genetically engineered, you know that because you planted them. So you already know that ahead of time. And I would argue that the disadvantage really is to the people who are trying to grow organic or trying to grow genetically free, GMO-free crops and have sell foods that way. They actually, the disadvantage is on them because they have to go through that whole regimen of testing. And it's a double-edged sword, I guess, to some degree, as I see it. And so I kind of dispute a little bit about the huge cost of all this testing that you're going to have to do on your GE crops, because you already know it. So if you label it, you're done.
Yes.
Thank you, Representative Holvey, for the question. That's a very good question. And I think, unfortunately, it's a misconception. It's true that I know whether I plant a GE crop. I know the seed that I purchase. It's also true that someone who's selling a non-GMO verified product knows what they're planting, but who they're selling to doesn't know what they're planting, and they have to have some sort of mechanism to verify and enforce that. I know that I'm an honest person, and I know there's a lot of honest people out there, but not everybody is honest, and so there will require some sort of testing, verification, and enforcement mechanism in order to make this proposal legitimate in the marketplace. And that will require significant costs, as you reference. Niche specialty markets that have some sort of a verification standard do incur cost, and so it would be, I would assume, a similar process and similar costs associated with labeling for GE and verifying and certifying that. And I think it's important to note that the difference between those specialty markets and our markets, meaning conventional and GE products, is those are sold as commodities. So they're sold as not demanding a premium in the marketplace. So there really isn't a mechanism to compensate for those costs other than raising the cost or reducing profitability for farmers. Whereas the specialty markets, such as the National Organic Standard, the non-GMO product, many other voluntary labeling initiatives, their purpose is to demand a premium in the marketplace. And I, as a farmer, am excited about those voluntary initiatives, and I'm excited that there is demand and growing demand for those voluntary initiatives, and they're receiving a substantial premium for their product. And I worry that mandatory labeling actually dilutes the marketplace and erodes the profitability of those innovative marketing initiatives that we've seen emerge, particularly in the last 5 or 10 years. The fact that a company like Cheerios can market it as non-GE, presumably that's in their interest, and I think that's really exciting. And the fact that the non-GMO project, which is that non-GMO label, which you see on quite a lot of food these days, the fact that they've been so successful, I think, is very, very exciting. And I worry that mandating labels actually erodes an opportunity for those entrepreneurs to innovate.
Great. Representative Berger?
Thank you. I'll be brief. So what I hear you saying, and I have before me producer and basically manufacturer, the food processors take what you produce, they combine it, they then have to figure out what they bought, what it, under a labeling system like this. And I guess I want it clear on the record that what you're saying is that this would put Oregon agricultural products at an economic disadvantage in the marketplace, cost more to produce, and in a competitive environment, this would hurt your industries.
Chair, if I might, I would agree completely. And sometimes it's not just the cost of testing. It is certification and record keeping. The farmer may know what they're growing. The processor's combining dozens and dozens of ingredients from different sources. If there's threat of litigation
They're going to want to know that their raw product matches their label. And so they're going to require it on every shipment, on every lot of food and product that goes out the door. And that's really a burden only on those companies doing business here.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Hicks.
And so regarding the labeling process, to which you started to describe at the federal level, we do have pretty much ubiquitous references to, like, cholesterol, sodium, saturated fat. Are these required? And if so, how did that become the law of the land? Did somebody show up with a science report and convince somebody in the government that that's what has to happen? Could you just elaborate a bit?
And Madam Chair, Representative Hicks, my first comment to that is we have a lot of scientific evidence, and the FDA has done all the reviews that there are health reasons why people need to be informed about that. The FDA has reviewed the GE crops and those newer products, and they've determined there is not a health or safety impact. Our members in our industry are very concerned about adding things to the label when it's not relevant and it's not pertinent to the public health and safety and nutritional information. And we have to rely on the FDA and those scientific and regulatory bodies to make those determinations.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. We've been focusing, at least as I've been listening to the discussion about seeds. It's my understanding that alterations can also occur with fertilizers and certain kinds of sprays and pesticides and all of those kinds of things, and perhaps even additives to the water. And so maintaining that all of those things are clear too is an interesting proposition.
If I may, Madam Chair. I think that's a great question, and it kind of goes to the heart of this being kind of identified as a right-to-know issue. And it's unfortunate if there's a view that those of us who oppose mandatory labeling oppose a right-to-know. I don't oppose a right-to-know any more than I oppose a right-to-know what particular types of fertilizers are used or whether I happen to drive a red tractor or a green tractor on my farm. That's information. And if a consumer wishes to pay for that information and there's a profit opportunity to voluntarily label that information, that's great for farmers and it's good for consumers as well. And I think that highlights why it's so important to stand behind and reinforce FDA standards of material difference so that the authority to require, to mandate a label should be limited when there's a nutritional, a health difference, or a food safety concern for consumers. Some of those other differences in the process and the way food is produced, artificial fertilizers, synthetic fertilizers, amount of water use, water use efficiency, the type of tractor that I drive, whether my tractor uses biofuels, that type of stuff. That's important information for the sustainability of our food system and for farm productivity. It's not important for the food safety and the health benefits of consumers. And I think that's a very important distinction between mandatory labels and voluntary marketing initiatives.
Okay. Any other? All right. Thank you so much for coming out here to testify today. Okay, our next panel would be Melissa Wisherer, Christy Steele, and Representative Lou Frederick. And Representative Frederick, we'll have you kick it off.
Okay.
And once we get everybody up.
Thank you, Chair Hoyle, and members of the committee. I'm Lou Frederick, State Representative from District 43, North and Northeast Portland. I'm going to start off with a quick little, it's a short little thing. There's a little oval shape, almost bat, football-shaped bacteria called Pseudomonas. And it tends to, one variety of it has a curious effect. It basically stops frost from forming on plants. In the Tule Valley, they tested that, and I was down there in the Tule Valley about mid-1980s, testing to see whether they could spray that on because it had been genetically engineered to spray it on plants so that they could stop frost from going on, from going. It didn't work, but they did try it. At least as far as I can tell, it didn't work.
That is a part of the
dissertation that I've been working on for a while on biotechnology and local television news, because we, in fact, don't know much about what's going on out there. And this is part of why I've done a lot of work on genetically engineered organisms, because I've genetically engineered organisms. I've done that work. It is an interesting thing to do. You get a lot of interesting things to play around with. I played around with phosphorescent bacteria and other things, putting the phosphorescent gene in other bacteria and actually phosphorescent plankton, and putting the gene in bacteria and in yeast and in tobacco plants, just because we wanted to find out some things. I think the point for me is that we don't know a whole lot. The general public does not know a whole lot about genetically engineered plants. They do not know how pervasive it is. We have 95% of the corn, something like 98% of the cotton and other plant, other things. Soybeans are really, it's incredible. Something on the 80 to 90% of the soybeans that are grown, produced in the United States, are in fact genetically engineered. And they are there to deal with the genetic engineering. It's dealing with herbicides and pests of one form or another, but we don't know that. And it's important, I think, for us to find out what's there. I think it's important to be able to say this is what you are dealing with and what you're not dealing with, because otherwise you are ingesting something that you're not clear of. And the reports, the studies have been pretty straightforward. They've found very little that has been a direct health attack on humans, but there are some concerns about how it affects the rest of the environment, and people are concerned about that. To that end, I had a long conversation with a group of people from under the World Affairs Council who came from different embassies around the world. They were the folks who lived in those countries who were working for American embassies, and they were Japan and Kenya and Spain and a number and all sorts of places. And what we had the conversation, they wanted to talk about things. The first thing they wanted to talk about was genetically engineered organisms and products coming from Oregon. That was the key thing for them. And the folks, we talked for a half an hour on just that subject out of the hour and a half that we spent together. And they were very concerned about what was coming in from Oregon and whether they could be proven that it was not going to be genetically engineered, or at least be labeled, because they were determined to at least know that. We should recognize that that's part of our export market, not just in terms of seeds, specialty seeds, but also in terms of the products that we produce and manufacture here. So I wanted to suggest that this is certainly a good direction to go regarding genetically labeling genetically engineered organisms or genetically engineered products for the state of Oregon.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Frederick. Next. Just identify yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Christy Steele. I'm here on behalf of Hummingbird Wholesale. We are a small to medium-sized company that distributes food located in Eugene, Oregon, and we serve the Pacific Northwest. Our customer base includes markets, co-ops, manufacturers, buying clubs, and individuals. And all of our customers are staunch advocates for healthy people and healthy planet. And I'd like to echo what the president of Whole Foods Market said earlier. They are all asking for labeling. They're all asking questions about our products that we carry, because they're learning more and more that some of them, even if they're organic, there is a risk, and they want to find out what we know about the products we're carrying. So consumers do want to know. And our company, Hummingbird Wholesale, supports labeling of genetically engineered foods because we believe that consumers should be able to choose for themselves whether to eat foods that have genetically engineered ingredients. If these foods are safe, as the biotech industry asserts, then why hide it? At best, the science is inconclusive as to whether or not they're safe. And since the federal government continues to rely only on tests that are done by the biotech industry, who stands to gain from these tests showing that the foods are safe, then it's not a surprise that many consumers don't trust those safety claims, and they want to know for themselves and be able to choose for themselves whether they're eating genetically engineered foods. And many, many products on the shelves today do have these ingredients. It's estimated over 70 to 80%. So without labeling required for genetically engineered foods, people who wish to avoid eating them cannot possibly do so without spending a lot of time researching, learning what the high-risk foods are and those hidden ingredients that aren't, you know, it's not just soybeans and corn, but there's a lot of things made from soybeans and corn that you have to learn a long list of ingredients to look out for. So they need to spend a lot of time, and they need to have the economic ability to buy organic foods. All Oregon citizens should have the choice to avoid purchasing genetically engineered foods if they choose to do so, not just people with a wealth of time or money. As someone who's worked in the food industry for many years, I can attest to the fact that labeling is not an unreasonable request. There's a lot of things we label, and to my company and to myself, this makes sense. It's in alignment with those other things that are required. It's not too expensive, the costs are negligible, and they won't be passed on to consumers. Studies have shown this. I can also say with confidence that labeling will create more clarity and not more confusion. Imagine somebody who's never heard of genetically engineered foods brings home a product, and when they get home, they notice that their favorite brand potato chips says genetically engineered on it. They've never seen this before. I don't think they're going to be confused. I think they're going to be curious and maybe a little concerned. They might look it up on the internet or call a friend or family member who they trust about these sorts of things, who seems to know about these sorts of things. They're going to learn more. They're going to become less confused. So I believe that labeling will empower consumers to learn more and make informed choices. I also would like to respond to something said earlier. I don't think that mandating labeling will erode the niche markets of organic or non-GMO verified. You may notice that many of the people supporting the labeling initiative are from the organic industry. Organic is mainly about not using chemical inputs, and that won't change with this. So they will still have their niche market. And as far as non-GMO verification, some people want to avoid genetically engineered foods entirely for a multitude of reasons, and even if it's required that genetically engineered foods have labeling, it will be important to many people that they are eating foods that are verified not to have ingredients. And if you read the standards by the Non-GMO Project, you'll see they're very strict standards. And before that, I wasn't trusting things that had that label that still had corn in them. But after reading the standards, I feel safe eating corn products that have that Non-GMO Project stamp on them. So I think that niche market will continue to grow as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Hoyle and members of the committee. My name is Melissa Wishrath. I'm an attorney at the Center for Sustainability Law. We're a nonprofit organization that works to create sustainable food systems here in Oregon. My testimony today is in support of HB 4100, and I'm going to address some concerns that were raised by opponents at previous hearings dealing with some of the constitutionality of this bill. First off, HB 4100 does not raise any valid First Amendment Commerce Clause or preemption issues. It kind of goes back to the heart of what this bill is about. This bill is about consumer protection. And when we think about consumer protection, we really should think about consumers and think, okay, what does the consumer have in their state of mind? What are they thinking when they go into the store to purchase something? And so we really want to analyze things from the point of view of a consumer. And we really want to encourage a democratic kind of idea when they're shopping that they have enough information at the point of purchase to make a well-informed decision. This bill isn't about what's good or bad about GMOs. It's not about, you know, will this stymie technology? Will it increase technology? It's really not, you know, we're kind of getting off topic there. What this bill is about is, will consumers have more information at their point of purchase from which they can make a reasonable and rational decision? And that's their choice. The word genetically engineered, it's not pejorative. It's a standard scientific industry term. It actually was developed by the industry itself. So it doesn't have any negative or positive connotations. Really, all it's doing is identifying how the product was produced. Was this, you know, does this have a novel trait, or does it contain BT? Those sort of things. That's what this phrase "genetically engineered" is identifying. So from a First Amendment analysis, because you're just requiring a factual and uncontroversial statement, the label says genetically engineered, you're not having them take a stance that this is good or bad. You're just saying this has been genetically engineered. So because it's factual and it's not controversial, controversy doesn't mean it doesn't create a stir. You know, we're all here today. You've heard from opponents that this will, you know, they feel that there's a controversy around GMOs. But from a labeling perspective under the First Amendment, it's not a controversy in the general sense. It's whether or not they have to endorse a certain viewpoint. So if you were saying that they would have to say these are good or bad, coupled with the term genetically engineered, then you would have a controversial statement. But here you're just making a plain old fact that this technology was genetically engineered. It only has to be reasonably related to a legitimate government, I'm sorry, not even a legitimate, but just a government purpose. So we have examples from Vermont. They wanted to label light bulbs with mercury. So they wanted to have a label when you bought a light bulb. It had mercury, it was on a label. And that was upheld as constitutional because the state of Vermont passed it just because they wanted to protect human health and the environment from mercury poisoning. New York has a calorie content labeling law, and the purpose behind that was that they wanted consumers to have information at the point of purchase that would help them make a healthier choice to reduce obesity. The DOT recently passed a labeling law for airlines. They wanted them to include the total price, so if consumers weren't just, you know, when you clicked, then all of a sudden you saw taxes and fees added on. And basically, the reasoning for the bill was we want to give people more information. More information is better under the First Amendment when it comes to commercial speech. We want consumers to be well informed. Most recently, USDA has their country of origin labeling. It's going to say born, raised, and slaughtered. And again, they did this to facilitate Buy American preferences. They wanted consumers at the point of purchase to know if you want to buy beef from America, go ahead and do it. So basically, you know, this doesn't raise any First Amendment issues, and it doesn't raise any Commerce Clause issues. We're treating in-state and out-of-state interests in the same manner. Hawaii's bill was going to favor in-state producers. This bill does not do that. It treats everybody equally, and it doesn't apply to out-of-state. So no other state, California, is not going to have a label requirement. We're just talking about Oregon here. And then lastly, preemption. There's no preemption issues. And in fact, the industry, this has been conceded on both sides, where they're actually calling on the federal government to do labeling. So
thank you so much. And again, I'm sorry, but we've got a lot of people, so I want to make sure everyone gets a chance to talk. Are there questions or comments, understanding that it's 4:45? We have another panel and a lot of people. Representative Holby.
I have one question for Melissa. I think Representative Hicks had mentioned the clear and conspicuous terminology when referring to how a label would be. Is that normal? I mean, that language normal for, you know, giving direction about labeling, and, you know, is it? Can you just explain
that
a little bit?
You know, a lot of the other labeling laws that I mentioned about mercury or, you know, country of origin, it's not displacing the nutrition label. Like you said, you know, you're still going to have your plain old, we're not dealing with any of the nutrition information. It's just going to be a brief, you know, two-word addition onto the back of a label. Similarly to, you know, this product, you've seen, someone brought up pesticides earlier, FIFRA regulates pesticides, you'll see, store away from children, something like along those lines. It's not a large, it doesn't overpopulate the label, it's just a very clean statement of fact.
Okay, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I thought I heard an earlier witness say that it would be very expensive to go through the process of determining whether something contained genetically engineered materials or not, and therefore to determine whether to label it or not. And I thought you said that the cost is actually quite low. Could you say a little more about that?
Sure. I think that Representative Holvey addressed it well when he said that the law that you guys are considering here does not require testing. It requires labeling by the folks who are choosing to grow genetically engineered seeds, and then that labeling would carry on down the line to the end consumer. And it may be that, I mean, I don't understand the entire process, but it may be that the somebody who brings a lawsuit against a company that believes their product is not labeled when it should be, that I can see testing would happen then. But as far as I understand, I don't see that we're requiring everybody who makes any food products to test, just that those who are planting genetically engineered seed to label and for that to carry on down to the end consumer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I understand the controversy now about the expense issue. Thank you.
Great. Anybody else? All right. Thank you so much. We really appreciate coming out.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Last panel. Carol Mallory Smith, Marie Bowers, and John Hewitt. Thank you very much. And start, just identify yourself for the record, please.
Certainly. Thank you, Chair Hoyle. My name is Carol Mallory Smith. I'm a professor of weed science at Oregon State University. In my position, I have conducted research with genetically engineered crops. My opinions are my own and do not represent Oregon State University. Thank you for this opportunity to make comments on this bill. I'm not here to either support or oppose the concept of labeling products that may contain ingredients from genetically engineered crops. I'm rather here to raise some questions about some of the specific points in the bill, and I hope that the sponsors will consider some of these. The governor has appointed a task force to address these issues, among other related issues related to genetically engineered crops. I believe that it would be in the best interest of the citizens of Oregon to let that task force make its recommendations before putting this before a vote of the people. I have two comments that are related to two areas. One is unintended consequences, and one is feasibility. Oregon could become the only U.S. State with a genetically food labeling requirement, even though others have passed. They also have prohibitions put on actually putting them into effect until other states, surrounding states, would actually also have the same requirements. So we could be isolated, especially in the western U.S., if this law passes. Our neighboring states, as yet, have not passed genetically labeling requirements. We don't have that opt-out sort of delaying the implementation of this within this bill until we would have other surrounding states, or at least other states in the West, that would also have the same requirements. So as a result of this, Oregon could actually become a niche market for other states, and the decision would be how big of a market is Oregon. And we are only 1% of the population in the U.S. Some of the large companies could decide that we're not a big enough market to actually sell into, and there also could be small companies that won't have the resources to package specifically for Oregon. This could limit the potential of some products into Oregon that would actually have an impact of unintended consequences that could lead to increased food costs. If the initiative increases food costs, because we are a niche market, it will disproportionately impact those of the lowest income. According to USDA statistics for 2010 to 2012, more than 13% of the households in Oregon are food insecure, which means they are food hungry. Many Oregonians would not have the income to deal with increased food prices. Clarity, I think, is needed with the impacts on crops that are actually grown within the state of Oregon. I've heard a couple comments about buying local from your farmers and wanting to support that market. Well, by the way, local farmers also do produce genetically engineered crops at this point in time in Oregon. They are important at the farm gate, and it's unclear how this bill would affect those growers. At this point of time, in most cases, we don't have a supply chain in place to segregate genetically engineered from non-genetically engineered supplies. The expense of making these changes to accommodate the law might be more than some growers could bear. I do not disagree with the statements in Section 3 related to consumers' right to know. However, Section 3D is unrelated to informing the consumer on food they purchase and consume. I am unaware of any data to support the statement that identifying food produced through genetic engineering will protect Oregon's agriculture economy and environment. In reality, there could be a negative impact on Oregon's agricultural economy if Oregon is the only state with genetically engineered labeling and that requirement increases expenses to growers or producers. And I also have a question about the feasibility of testing. I know there's been questions about whether we would have to test what's coming in, but if there's a complaint, it's going to have to be addressed through testing. I'm not sure that this bill makes it clear who's going to be doing the testing, who's going to bear the cost of that testing, and also, depending on the processing procedures, it may not even be possible to detect GM products in a product, simply because the testing procedures aren't sensitive enough to do that. So I really think that at a state level, the feasibility of having a law that only Oregon carries is going to be difficult.
Thank you so much for your testimony. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Marie Bowers. I am a fifth-generation farmer down in Harrisburg, Oregon, so Representative Barnhart's district. Anyway, on our farm, we grow grass seed, wheat, metafoam, and this year's turnip seed, if it turns out, because the folks decide to eat it all. Most everything I grow is a food crop. The grass seed feeds the sheep and cattle locally, nationwide, internationally. We pasture our fields all winter long with sheep. The wheat goes into the noodles. The metafoam's unique. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that crop, but it's crushed for oil and cosmetics. And the meal that's left over, and the leftover stuff, is used for cattle feed. There's also honey that comes from the bees that pollinate the metafoam. We're constantly trying to expand the diversity of the farm. We try new methods, crops, and technology to find what fits and makes sense for our farm. However, we're often limited by the soil and climate in the area. Farmers have many different tools and methods that we can utilize to produce safe and abundant food, and genetic engineering is one of these tools. No one makes you use one method or another. It's all about choice and diversity. Diversity is a beautiful thing, particularly in Oregon agriculture. That's what allows Oregon farmers to grow over 230 commodities in the state. The different methods, markets, and technologies all work together for Oregon agriculture and ultimately benefit the state's economy. The proponents of this bill ultimately do not support diversity. They would like to see GE crops disappear entirely, no matter the cost to family farmers and the cost to family shoppers. As late President John F. Kennedy said, "The farmer is the only man in our economy who buys everything at retail, sells everything at wholesale, and pays freight both ways. Labeling genetically engineered products are costly. The cost would pass down to the farmer. Either it goes to the consumer or it goes to the farmer. There are costs in implementation and enforcement of regulations, and someone needs to pay for that. There's also the cost of litigation. The bill clearly states if a mistake is made, you're wide open to litigation. Any person supposedly aggrieved by a mislabeled food can seek legal action against whoever they feel responsible for it. And to be clear, I'm not against labeling. I'm against mandatory labeling. There are many companies out there that currently label products GMO-free. If you buy certified organic, you're guaranteeing that you avoid GMOs. mandating additional labels redundant and pointless where the labels already exist. Ultimately, this bill seeks to stigmatize competition through legislation and litigation, not with honest marketing. I urge you to vote no on House Bill 4100. Mandating genetically engineered labels is costly, a regulatory nightmare, and ultimately redundant. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, committee members. John Hewitt on behalf of the Grocery Manufacturers Association, Trade Association representing food and beverage companies nationwide. I guess if you don't mind, Chair, I would just like to abbreviate my comments and say that I do concur with panel members Curry, Richards, and the rest of that panel. I think they've taken the big part of what I wanted to say from me today, which I applaud them for that. I would like to go ahead and adopt their testimony as my own, if that's okay. I will just bring to the table 2 points with respects to our opposition to this bill at this time, that we believe it is unnecessary and premature. Unnecessary because, you know, we believe, you know, consumers do have a lot of interest. I think that's something that you all would hear as much as our member companies. However, which ones of those interests warrant legislative intervention? I think that really is the question that before this committee and this legislative body. Artificial flavoring, if it's grown with low-till, no-till, produced in a zero-emissions plant, produced locally, what are those consumer interests that we think are appropriate to legislate as mandated on labels, and what aren't? I would suggest to this committee that labels should be reserved for those most important safety, health, and nutrition information items, that we should have uniformity in that system. To that end, there is a system in place with the USDA and the FDA. I would continue to support that existing system that we do have in place. I will say that, you know, I often get asked, well, what if you're not in favor of this, you know, if you don't support this, what are you in favor of? And I guess I would offer, Madam Chair, that our organization, along with 28 others, has established a coalition at the federal level to do just that, to be in favor of something with respects to GMO labeling. Last week, we announced a broad-based coalition to advocate Congress for action on a federal GMO labeling solution. So there are a number of specific points relative to that. I will spare the committee the details of that in interest of others that it came a long way, I'm sure, to testify on this important issue. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Very much appreciate that. And thank you all for coming out again. We really appreciate you coming out to testify. Questions, comments from the committee? Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I missed the professor's name.
Carol Mallory Smith.
Thank you. My question is, could you describe what your area of academic expertise is and what department you're in?
I'm a wheat scientist. I'm in the Department of Crop and Soil Science at Oregon State University.
I'm sorry, was it wheat science?
Weed.
Sorry, weed.
Weed.
W-E-D?
Weed science, yes.
Right. Thank you. I assume we're not using a euphemism here, but actually talking about plants that you don't want in your field.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. I think that's all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Do we have another panel?
No.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Metafoam, is that brilliant white stuff that you go by, and it looks like it's snowing in summer?
Yeah, it's about May. It looks
I just
like
wanted
snow.
That confirmed.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you so much. And again, I want to thank all of our panelists, expert panelists, for coming out. I know many of you have taken a day off of work to come out here, and we really appreciate that. And with that, we're now going to turn to public testimony. I will let you know that we've lost a few committee members because there are other committees that started at 5 o'clock. We're still making up from the snow days, and so we're having evening committee hearings. So what I would say is there may be, because the committee generally ends at 5 o'clock, some committee members may have to leave. I plan to stay, and whoever is able to stay, I would encourage you to do so. We will call people up for public testimony with a 2-minute time limit. Please keep your testimony focused on the bill, on House Bill 4100, and I will certainly stay until
everyone has had a chance to say their piece. So I will call you up. And if I, again, if I mispronounce your name, I apologize in advance. Ben Martin Horst and Maria Lung. And Rebecca Landis. Okay, if you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Chair Hoyle, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you here today. My name is Ben Martin Horst. I'm the grocery manager at LifeSource Natural Foods here in Salem. We are an integral, vibrant member of the Salem community, have been for 20 years. If you want to talk about food in Salem, we're the people to come to. So while I'm here, first and foremost, as a concerned citizen of Oregon, a father, and a lover of food, I also represent LifeSource Natural Foods, our president, Alex Beamer, and also our very diverse customer base. We strongly support passage of House Bill 4100 and its referral to voters this fall. We find that this is not a partisan issue to our customers. We have customers from all sides of the aisle, so to speak, and they strongly support mandatory GMO labeling. Our customers expect transparency in their food supply, and we believe they deserve it. We're constantly asked for more information regarding possible GMOs in the products that we carry. There has been some question about why should we label genetically modified foods in particular and not certain other things. This is the key issue to all of our consumers. Unlike more than 64 other countries, the United States does not have a legal or regulatory framework for GMOs. Oregon has the opportunity to pave the way and lead on this issue. You have heard about the non-GMO verification project. That project, verifying products as non-GMO, has had a 66% increase in sales from 2011 to 2012. In 2013, those sales exceeded $5 billion nationwide. It's the fastest growing segment of our industry.
Great. Thank you so much. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Mariah Learn from Eugene, Oregon.
Great.
Thank you. I'm here to ask you to please support HB 4100, mandatory labeling foods containing GMOs. I have reviewed much of the scientific literature as well as economic and environmental problems associated with genetic engineering and would prefer not to consume GMO foods or support this industry. I have the right to know whether or not any foods I purchase contain GMO ingredients. Please provide me that right. As I understand it, every gene performs multiple functions within our own natural organism. To insert a gene from one organism into another without understanding the multiple effects that could occur within an entirely new organism, organic system, is indeed playing genetic roulette. These gambles are being taken with the health of both individuals and whole ecosystems. GMO crops have also created soil degradation, mass deforestation in many parts of the world, and have contributed to global warming and contaminate many non-GMO crops. There are multiple reasons consumers may want GMO labeling. I'll leave you with a quote from prominent genetic scientist Dr. David Suzuki. Any politician or scientist who tells you these GMO products are safe is either very stupid or lying. Thank you.
Okay, next could we have Aurora Paulson and Stacy Phillips and Jack Dresser. Hey, wait for Jack to get up, and then you'll start, okay?
Sure.
Okay. Okay,
Howdy, folks. My name is Stacy Phillips. I live here in Salem. I'm with the Oregon Right to Know Petition Organizers. We've been trying to get a labeling initiative on the ballot for about 2 years now. Last time we were shut down by the same people who were lobbying against tobacco being labeled as causing cancer and having other ill health effects. Just to let some of the people know what's going on here with the labeling, we label things that contain pesticides. Walmart was selling corn last year, BT corn, that has pesticide inside the corn. It goes directly, you know, people eat this, it goes into their gut, they are being affected by this pesticide, and it's not labeled. People have a right to know whether there is pesticides in their food. There is ample evidence of contamination of the ecosystem in India, where BT cottonseed was fed to farm animals, causing the deaths of thousands of farm animals and leading to the suicides of the farmers. Here in the United States, RBGH it's a growth hormone that is was given to cows so they would produce more milk. It has been linked to prostate, breast cancer, and other ill health effects. We have a right to know. These studies came out about that, and I don't know if it's banned, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, people know what's in their food as far as that goes. One more thing I'd like you to know is that L-tryptophan was genetically modified in the 1980s and given as a food supplement to people. It killed at least 100 Americans and caused sickness or disability to 5 to 10,000 others. These are all facts. These are all documented, and I believe we have the right to know that these toxins are in our food supply. Thank you very much. Please support this labeling bill. If it doesn't happen here, we're going to go through the initiative process and do it ourselves.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Dresser.
Yeah, I strongly support this.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Jack Dresser. I'm a psychologist. I live in Lane County in McKenzie Valley. I've had a long career in psychology, from clinical practice through developing prevention programs, through doing 15 years of NIH-funded risk reduction research, and now in political psychology. And throughout this entire time, I've been struggling with the self-destructiveness of my species. And I see this manifested at the collective as well as the individual level, and I see genetic engineering as very much a manifestation of that. As a number of people have testified, genetically engineered products may look alike, may smell alike, may taste alike, but they ain't alike. And they wouldn't qualify for a patent if they were alike. The whole idea that these are substantially equivalent and yet and also qualify for a patent as a novel invention is an oxymoron, and it's absurd, and it's an insult to the intelligence of the American people. Now, I don't want to support any genetically modified industry. I don't want to eat any of that food, and I want to know, and I have a right to know. And the reason I have a right to know, as much as has been described here, when you insert a novel protein, a gene, into something that is a different organism, there are many, many unforeseen circumstances and results, and there are no algorithms existing to predict all those effects. It is, in effect, genetic roulette. And as has been mentioned, the destructiveness to the planet has been enormous. These companies have destroyed millions of acres of forests in Argentina and Brazil. It's outrageous what's been done to this planet by these extractive, what I would call psychopathic companies.
Thank you, Mr. Dresser. We've got a 2 minute.
Right.
But thank you so much. And if anybody wants to submit written testimony, if you don't feel like you've had the time to express everything that you want to say, please send us written testimony. We do read that, and we do want to hear from you, but please identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Aurora Paulson, and I'm an attorney for the Nonprofit Center for Food Safety based in our Portland office. I thank the committee for the opportunity to testify today, and thank you for staying late. I appreciate your time. My colleagues have summarized the public policy reasons to support this bill, and we've submitted written comments, so I don't need to go over them here. I just wanted to touch on a few of our basic points. I wanted to talk to you about the crafting of this law and the fact that it's been carefully drafted to comply with federal and state law. And you might hear a few scare tactics occasionally in opposition, the first being that this is not consistent with the First Amendment, but this does not violate First Amendment commercial speech rights. The second point I wanted to make is that HB 4100 is consistent with the U.S. Constitution's Dormant Commerce Clause. And finally, federal food labeling does not preempt HB 4100. And we'll be happy to answer and provide supplemental information on any of those topics. I also, if I have time left, wanted to respond to a few points I've heard this afternoon. I think there was a question about enforcement from the Department of Agriculture, and I wanted to point out that the citizen enforcement provision in Section 7 removes some of the burden from the state, but only if the state chooses not to enforce or is not able to enforce. So that actually saves money for the state. And then finally, I would like to point out that the costs that everyone is so concerned about result from the fact that consumers are expected to avoid genetically engineered foods. And I wanted to end with our right to know. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay. Next group of people is Rick North, Julia DeGraw, Karen Swift. Start. How about you? Because you have the microphone in front of you. No, oh. We're going to start this way. We'll go from right to left.
Okay. My name is Rick North. I'm a resident of Durham in Washington County. Obviously, I'm very much in favor of the right to know what's in our food. I have a personal history in this. From 2003 to 2011, I was the project director of the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Campaign for Safe Food. GMOs were our main issue. I'm not a doctor or a scientist. However, I worked with them here and all over the country. A lot of people have a lot of different reasons for wanting labeling. Mine was particularly human health. I have very great concerns. These have not been demonstrated safe for human health. Or the environment. One thing I found out very early, which I was very surprised and most people don't know, about the FDA. The FDA doesn't do any safety testing. The FDA doesn't require any independent testing of GMOs. The only testing is being done by the very same corporations that are developing the GMO crops. They submit a statement saying they're safe, and the FDA virtually always says yes. This is not meaningful regulation. This is an inherent conflict of interest and a rubber stamp. And I think people need to realize that when they always point to say, the FDA just says it's okay, must be okay, we don't need the labeling. Yes, we do. The FDA has also said at times, or the federal government, Vioxx is safe. DES is safe. DDT is safe, the EPA. All kinds of substances and drugs have been pronounced safe by the federal government, only to be demonstrated later they are wrong. And oftentimes the public are the ones that bring this up. So since the federal government is not taking any meaningful action, and let's face it, Congress is not going to move on this, I hope, at least in terms of precluding states' rights here to do this, it's up to the states to take the lead. Thank you very much for this bill. I completely support it.
Thank you so much. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Julia DeGraw, and I'm the Northwest organizer with Food and Water Watch. We are a nonprofit organization that advocates for common sense policies that will result in healthy, safe food and access to to clean drinking water and safe, affordable drinking water. So I submitted my comments in writing. You can definitely review those. I wanted to respond to some of the things that were said earlier, and Rick, you actually addressed the FDA point that I was going to bring up, which is good. No, you did it. You're probably more articulate than I would have been. But something I also wanted to bring up is, like, I mean, Food and Water Watch, as a national group, we do have a regional office here in the Northwest, and I work at a regional and local level and statewide level. We totally have a commitment to passing federal regulation to label genetically engineered foods. Of course, that's an ideal scenario. But as many movements in this country have gone, you look at women suffragists, you know, we went state by state until we got a national policy, right? You know, we went state by state for a lot. I think same-sex marriage is going to go the same way, right? You know, I think this is a chance for Oregon to be leading the way for genetically engineered food labeling. The consumer demand is out there. The vast majority of Americans want to see their foods labeled. They believe they have a right to know. None of these campaigns, when people vote down GMO food labeling, do so because they don't believe they have a right to know. It's because they, you know, the ads are confusing, and that's what happens. But what we do know is that individuals across the country, vast majority of individuals, want to see GMO food labeling, and we'll be on the right side of history if we pass this legislation in Oregon, and other states will follow, and we need to start setting that standard here. And I really urge folks to support and urge you to vote for in favor of HB 4100. Thanks.
Thank you all for remaining late to listen to the sentiments of all of us. My name is Karen Swift with Biosafety Alliance, Portland, Oregon. I've already submitted testimony, so I suppose I'll just preface this with saying that I grew up from a family of farmers. On my father's side, he's an organic farmer in California. 10 years ago, transitioned to organic after seeing soil toxicity issues with Roundup. That's one issue that a lot of GMOs have. The majority of GMOs in the world are contain Roundup-resistant traits and other resistant traits and have increased pesticide use on a global scale. On my mother's side of the family, all of my uncles are conventional pig farmers who avidly try to avoid genetically engineered soy in anticipation of potential market competitiveness, particularly in markets such as Japan. Denmark is one of the 64 nations in the world that labels GMOs and requires it. All of them do not particularly like organic foods, but support GMO labeling. I think these are a couple major issues with GMOs, particularly the increased pesticide use. That's a sentiment. Many individuals are in opposition to GMOs for the increased herbicide use. So I'd like to refute a couple claims from the farmers who very kindly gave their testimony talking about potential blight-resistant traits and drought-resistant traits and such. The fact of the matter is very, very few, basically 0% of GMOs sold globally have these kind of traits. A lot of seeds with diverse traits have actually been eroded as a result of the consolidation of the food supply and the seed supply. Now approximately 10 companies control 67% of this global seed supply and are marketing just a few varieties. Varietal diversity is incredibly important for resilience to pests, for resilience to disease. This is a major issue. Again, there's also some other sentiments expressed by people who do not want to see patenting of seeds. This has increased costs for farmers and eroded diversity of seed. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming up. All right. Jeannie Harden, Sabrina Siegel.
Okay, hello. Thank you again for staying late. And my name is Jeannie Harden. I am a Grange member. I belong to Spencer Creek Grange, and also the Oregon State Grange, where we recently decided that our pro-GMO stance for Oregon State Grange was to be rescinded in order to be more neutral and to take into account all of the different growers that the State Grange... I'm sorry for...
You,
no, that the State Grange represents. And here in this very room still, even though more than half of us have gone home already, we still represent a huge variety of perspectives. And if we all, I think, look in our gut right now, we're going to find a little tension, a little feeling of what we're afraid of losing and what we want to gain out of this hearing today. But I would like us all to just notice that for a second and remember that we are all here united to work for a better country in all ways. And to that end, at the Spencer Creek Grange, we started a GMO study group. Just like this room, we're a very diverse group that includes people who are very pro-GMO, very anti-GMO. And we work together to try to find out the facts. And we don't always agree on each other's science. But one thing that we did decide we could agree on with big smiles was, you know, just label it. Just label it. No big deal. We don't all have to buy the same thing. We can all respect one another, and we can give each other that freedom. Just label it. It's a big nothing. 97% of the country wants it, and that is a compelling reason to label. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Just identify yourself for the record.
My name is Sabrina Siegel, and I'm a concerned citizen and mother, and I just want to tell you, a few things, but I'm very distressed about the GMOs and in our food and for my children, and I'm sure I represent millions in this country that feel the same, and when I go to the market, It's a very complex situation for me now because I have to read each ingredient on the ingredients list and try from the best knowledge that I have to know if this is genetically modified. I'm trying to research and know there's hidden ingredients. The soy lecithin is from the GMO soy. There's many. Vitamin C is from a GMO corn, I believe. So it's just sort of you have to become a real expert now as a consumer to sort of take a guess at what is being modified if you want to avoid it for your family. And there are studies that I have seen that show harm to animals, and these are the same studies that the heads of 64 countries that require mandatory labeling that they've seen and that they've chosen to honor and find credible to make that decision. 64 countries have mandatory labeling. Some are third world countries, even some that have terrible environmental policy. Even they don't want the GMOs in their food. They want their people to know. And I wanted to say that I know, I'm aware that many food producers in our country export their products already to these countries, these 64 countries that require labeling, and they already have to put that there are GMO ingredients. So that system is already in place. It's not a problem. And also one last thing, doctors and scientists need to know, they need to be able to track that their patients are eating the GMO food, so there can be human feeding studies because there are no long-term studies saying these are safe, not one.
Thank you so much. All right, I don't have anyone else listed. Was there anyone else? So, 1, 2, come on up, 2 minutes each. Three. Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Matt Nelson. I'm here representing Luna and Larry's Coconut Bliss, Madam Chairwoman, and members of the committee. I have given my Written testimony to the assistant to my left. It really just outlines how I feel that, and there's a lot of agreement that this labeling initiative going forward actually creates economic benefits within Oregon, benefits for the farms. It's going to open up new markets. It will essentially distinguish Oregon-grown products from imported industrial agriculture products. It's benefiting Oregon farm operations. We've seen the natural and organic market grow 20% year over year since 1990. And we've seen that consumer base grow. And because of that, what the marketplace is showing, that consumers are seeking more information. So we are simply, or what this bill simply does is catch up to the marketplace. The marketplace of consumers is wanting more information. The information's out there. Well, give it to us. This is what we're asking for. And this does better for farms. I do want to speak to, you have my information, and I do want to speak to points that were made earlier about cost, you know, from the Northwest processors. We are a small to medium-sized business. We're commodities where your products come from that go into ice cream, that go into products across the board to manufacture these food products. We already know where they come from. We track those. There's paperwork already all the way down to the farm. That's how we market them. They already know that. And if somebody wanted to tell you what color tractor that the farmer is driving, they can do that, and that's great. But the information's already there. The paper trail won't necessarily grow exponentially. The other part from the gentleman from the GMA, he's right. There is a large group that wants to work on how Congress works on GMO food labeling. They want it to be labeled natural. That's what they're working on. Just call it natural. So we're ready for this as a state, and I appreciate your time. Thank you for staying.
Thank you very much.
My name is Ellen Bridges, and I don't have enough volume. My name is Ellen Bridges, and I'm here from Lane County. I live in Eugene, Oregon. I moved here to this wonderful state of Oregon in 1986. We've gone all over the country traveling with my husband. So I am here to tell you that I am adamantly opposed to genetically modified foods. I want labels on them. It's just like this gentleman here said, who I love your products. Coconut Bliss might be a little spendy, but when I want some ice cream, I want real food. I totally changed my life and my health by eating non-GMO foods. In 2005, we moved down here, and I guess since I was 20 years old, I started eating partially organic foods. At first, I was like, why would anyone eat organic? It costs more. What kind of nonsense is that? Well, over the years, I found that it keeps me healthy. When we moved back down here in 2005, we totally remodeled our home. And during that time, we did all the woodwork, all the painting, all of that. Up to that point, I had only eaten organic foods. We moved back down from Bellingham. I couldn't catch my breath. I was having a hard time breathing. I couldn't walk anywhere. I had all these issues. So my husband says, honey, you're just going to have to go to the doctor. And I said, I don't have any insurance. We can't go to the doctor. We just moved down here. He said, you're just going to have to go. They decided I had atrial fib. Well, that was pretty scary. So I listened to everything they said. I changed my diet. No chocolate, no caffeine, nothing. Just did everything they said. And 3 years later, a little later, in 2009, I learned about fibromyalgia. But I have the evil twin, which is myofascial pain syndrome. So I stopped eating wheat. I went to a conference, and they told me about that. And they said, well, why don't you just stop eating wheat? And I said, I only eat organic wheat. And they said, try it. After 3 days of not eating wheat and not eating any GMOs, I noticed such a difference in my life. I had energy. I want to sum this up by saying, please let the consumer decide. Label the genetically modified foods. If other people want to eat them, let them. But let the rest of us know what's in our food. And it isn't a big deal if you know where the ingredients come from. Thank you so much, Representative Hall.
Okay.
I'm sorry, absolutely.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Lori Maravilla, and I'm a new farmer here. I just bought 40 acres in Staten, Oregon, 2 years ago. I also would like to represent the minorities in this community. My husband is Mexican, doesn't speak much English, and his kids just came here from Mexico, all now starting an organic farm, which was industrial. My farm was sprayed, and the first thing I did in 6 months was to do soil testing, and there was nothing in the soil. It was all commercial used for 40 acres. And I'd also like to say that America was, at one time, an entire country based on farmers, 97% of the population. Right now, it's 3%. And these people that came up today, all of them had farms of 1,000 acres, this amount of acres. The average farmer in America was 40 acres. I'm not waiting for you guys. That's why I bought my farm. I have 40 acres, and it's mine, and it's paid for. And that's what Americans need to do right now, is go back to the farm and start to grow it yourself again, in my opinion. And from what I've learned right now on that farm, it's unbelievable. In 2 years, what I've learned, and soil doesn't have anything in it. This place, I've heard nothing but great things. That's why I came to Oregon, was because the soil was supposed to be the best soil in the world, Willamette Valley, incredible soils. You know, it is easy to turn because it's light and fluffy and got a lot of sand in it, but there was nothing, absolutely nothing growing in it, hardly any worms in it, no micronutrients in it, no, everything from calcium, phosphorus, everything was out of it. The farmer, my contract, I had a contract from the industrial farmers that were working it. They in my area, work about 600 acres a year. 600 acres. The guys never get out of a seat. They have never walked the farm since I've been there, ever, not one time. They don't know what's in the ground. All they do is come around and spray it. Spray it the next time, spray it this, spray that, pour down a seed, that's it. We need to know what's in our food. Not just with labeling, everything. People should go back to the farm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing.
Thank you for staying.
Grass Frank.
Madam Chair, am I allowed to have 2 minutes?
You know, you had already testified,
yes.
And but, you know.
Why not?
I'm
okay.
Willing to stay.
All right, 2 minutes.
Are we at the end?
We're at the end. We are at the end.
Thank you all. I didn't get to my last point, and it's very critical. We all know about the concept of substantial equivalence.
Name.
That's why we
can
are...
you please identify yourself for the record?
Sorry. Ray Seidler Ashland.
Okay.
We all know, I think, about the concept of substantial equivalence. Mm-hmm. That has evolved to where we are today. That's why we don't label. Mm-hmm. Scientists in Europe have just debunked that concept, and I need to tell you about it. 31 samples of American-raised soybeans, 10 from organic farming, 10 from conventional, non-GMO, and 10 farms contributed that had genetically engineered soy. They analyzed 35 nutritional parameters on each one of those 31 samples. The organically grown crop was higher in essential human amino acids, mathematically, statistically higher, had higher protein, and had two minerals that were higher than any of the other soy samples. The authors made a special point in the discussion of their peer-reviewed paper that substantial non-equivalence is what they discovered. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you so much. With that, I'd like to close the public hearing. Thank you all for staying.